So you're arguably the candidate with the greatest advantage in this race. You've been the vice president. You weren't burdened down by the impeachment trials. So how do you explain the performance in Iowa, and why should the voters believe that you can win the national election?
It's a good question. Number one, Iowa's a Democratic caucus. You ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a line dog-faced pony soldier. You said you were, but now you got to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you.
It is Friday, February 14th, 2020. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. It is a Hallmark holiday indeed. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, Bernie Sanders wins New Hampshire primary. Woo! This time with no DNC funny business. And the predictable establishment Democrat freakout begins. Chris Matthews runs to a bunker in fear of getting assassinated by communists in Central Park. Boom! Take that, lying dog-faced pony soldiers! Oh, man. Well, Bernie Sanders comes out with the latest morning consult poll with a double-digit lead in the national poll. Bernie, 29%, Biden, 19%, and billionaire Michael Bloomberg will have something to say about him today at 18%. Buttigieg, 11%, Warren, 10%, and Klobuchar at 5%. Now, before you get too excited, just remember, that's a national poll. That is not the statewide polls. However, next Saturday, February 22nd, are the Nevada caucuses. And following the New Hampshire primary, Biden's support in the Silver State has gone off a cliff. The latest polling numbers at 538 show Sanders in the lead with 24.8%, Biden with 16.0%, Warren at 10.8%, Buttigieg at 10.1%, Bloomberg with 8.4%. However, with the powerful culinary union criticizing Medicare for All in a document released to their members, there is some concern in the Sanders camp, and there should be. In a blow to Biden, who is actively seeking their endorsement, the union said, not after that little lion dog-faced pony soldier thing. I don't think so, Joe. We're not going to endorse this time around. And that was a big deal. Now it's anybody's guess about how it will turn out. We'll get another bite at the apple here at Out the Coop next Friday, since Saturday is the caucuses. And New York City journalist Blake Zeff lays out the Bloomberg playbook for purchasing power on Twitter. I mean, I should put it like this. Lays out on Twitter the Bloomberg playbook for purchasing political power. How's that? That's much better. That was clear. That is followed up by reports by both the New York Times and The Intercept about the down-ballot impacts of Bloomberg's poaching all the best political campaign talent across the country. Meanwhile, the endless stream of videos of Bloomberg's Me Too moments, racist rants, continue to trickle out. Take that, Democrats. No white knight here. That insult to injury, Bloomberg is hiring his own companies to service his campaign in a blatant case of self-dealing. And if you were in Philly last week, maybe you were lucky enough to be one of the 1,000 people who got to feast on cheesesteaks, hoagies, and plates of honey-coated brie, fig jam, and gourmet flatbreads, all on Bloomberg's tab. There you go. That's how he does it. The follow-up from Trump's firing of Alexander Vindman and Gordon Sondland raises serious questions about how much closer we have moved to an authoritarian state. Frankly, I don't even think we're going to be able to touch this like halfway today, given how much of other stuff is on there. But it's serious, serious concern. And several federal prosecutors, this is part of that fallout, quit following. Well, that's actually this is a separate related authoritarian move. Federal prosecutors quit following Trump's tweets and Attorney General Bill Barr's like dutiful response, undercutting prosecutor sentencing guidelines in the case for Roger Stone. The sentencing hearing will take place next Thursday in D.C., so we'll have an update for you next week on how bad we've gone down the rabbit hole. In today's PA focus, the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council, based out of Pittsburgh, voted to go all in against the re-election of African-American PA State Representative Summer Lee, one of the two DSA-backed candidates who swept into office in 2018. Summer Lee is the first black woman elected to the state house from Western Pennsylvania. Lee represents Braddock, PA. Yeah, that city where Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman made a name for himself, which is 60% black. But it had been represented by the white centrist Democrat Paul Costa, who held that seat for 20 years. According to reporting by Mike Elk, the fossil fuel-related unions, which dominated the Central Labor Council, are going all in against Lee, especially giving her strong support for the Green New Deal. Lee's opponent is the white pro-fracking North Braddock councilman, has already raised over $77,000, mostly from those local fossil fuel-based unions. Senate pro tempore Joe Scornati announces that he too, not me too, but he too, will be retiring at the end of the session. That's interesting. And if you can't stand Senator Pat Toomey and you're flirting with Bloomberg, you need help. Sunoco Pipeline, the company building the Mariner East 2 pipeline, was issued another $2 million fine this month that brings the total fines for the Mariner East 2 pipeline to more than $15 million. The latest fine is for a series of spills of lubricating drilling fluid under Raystown Lake in Huntington County in 2017. That's where more than 208,000 gallons of the drilling fluid ended up in the lake. And in Delaware County, the other end of the pipeline, Delaware County Emergency Services Director Tim Boyce submitted written testimony to the State Public Utility Commission, said that delayed ignitions event at that pipeline could lead to a leak of toxic fluids for the Mariner East 2 pipeline. It could impact a large amount of people in the county. Like, seriously, they actually said that a cloud that would be released about if there was a spill there, the cloud that would be released with a particular chemical stuff we're going through could actually be flammable. Like, light a cigarette, boom, there goes the neighborhood. Jesus Christ.
It's like Christmas vacation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And good news for Kutztown University student voters. The Berks County Elections Board officials unexpectedly moved the polling place away from Keystone Hall at Kutztown University campus to the Maxitani Township building more than 5 miles away. That happened back in 2013, I believe. The board made the move on sketchy grounds of issues of accessibility and safety, of which I actually sent out a kind of right-to-know request and got back, you know, said they got all these complaints. Well, let's see the call records. Nothing comes back. No concrete evidence was ever produced, and after several years of student activism and the continued fight and shout-out to KU history professor Eric Johnson, the board voted last week to move the polling place back to the Keystone Hall. And kudos to the folks from the Sunrise Movement. Kudos to Addison, who's doing bang-up work on organizing, who were out there speaking in favor of students. They got the polling place moved back. And this week, Kutztown University students, faculty, and staff launched a campaign called the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights. The campaign calls for a healthy working and learning environment, campus investment in the community's financial health, and a campus infrastructure to match the climate crisis. This is freaking taking off. In today's last call, we just got a couple quick mentions for free bill brewing releases. We got a blueberry mash. We got Tuku. I can never say it right, but it's an American porter. And we'll give you the heads up on the March 1st celebration heading into the Free Will Brewery for Mardi Gras. Want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also now turn back in to Rick's Daily Show on Twitter. He is back from his surgery. He's back in the seat, back live every night. You can check him out live on Twitter or from my 9, or you can check out his daily podcast, iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back, Rick. Man, it was great to see you back there. We want a progressive future, folks. We need progressive media, especially, I mean, given what's been going on in these primaries. I mean, how could you, like, think anything other than that, right? And you can help support Pull No Punches' homegrown progressive media today, because guess what? Those folks, they're coming to PA. Becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month helps do just that. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, the fight for the future in 2020. And we are all in for the fight. And now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep media in the movement, movement in the media. Become a member as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Woo, Sean, man, oh man, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Pen up a little bit. A little bit of rage and frustration, but I guess we should talk about the happy things first.
Yeah, we'll use this as an opportunity to kind of clear our palate for the weekend, so we don't have to carry it into the weekend. What would you say? Sound like a good plan?
That sounds like a great plan. Yeah. I'm going out tomorrow night, and I need to get Bloomberg off my chest before that happens.
Yeah, it's good. I'm going up the mountains with my family because my kids got a couple extra days too as well. And the last thing I want to be is steaming about this too as well. So we'll get that right in. But the good stuff first. You're right. Let's start off with the kind of appetizer you want. Right. This is also about the appetizer and the dessert, if I have to say it. But we'll say. Bernie Sanders. Oh, Bernie Sanders wins. Bernie Sanders wins the New Hampshire primary.
Starting to feel it. There's a lot of things happening. The math pundits that have been coming out of the woodwork since Tuesday have been my favorite, like saying he only won 26% of the vote and he didn't win the majority. He got the plurality in a 7-way primary. Fuck you, people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people are grasping at so many straws right now.
Yeah.
The freak out happening with the establishment wing of the Democratic Party is amazing.
Holy crap. It really is.
Joe Biden tanking.
Yep.
You know, Pete Buttigieg, I don't think he'll be here for much longer. Amy, hardly knew you. See ya once the latest Oppo stuff comes out against her. You won't be enjoying that third place spot much longer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting to say. I mean, like you said, one of my favorite ones, like the math people, right? You know, and by math, you know, what counts as a math person now are people like who can add, right? And basically say, okay, how do I create a scenario that it looks really bad for, or looks, you know, question for Bernie Sanders? And they did just this. They took like three other people, add them together, and say, look, it's not a majority. And there's other headlines that have come out to basically say, yeah, but he's not doing as well as decisive as he did in his win in the New Hampshire primary back in 2016.
Yeah, with one other person.
Right, exactly. I mean, like,
and Martin O'Malley.
Right. I mean, how... I don't even understand how these people can call themselves journalists half the time. And of course, most of them aren't. I mean, what's happened?
A lot of this shit's coming from my friends who are political operatives.
Yeah, you know what they
like
can do. I don't want to rain on your party out there, but I'm pretty freaking sick of hearing this kind of garbage. Right.
But, I also love the freak out that's happening on MSNBC. They're doing everything they can to make it look like Bernie didn't win. Did you see like the one picture going around? It had everyone from fifth place to first place, going from 5-4-3-2-1. So Bernie looks like he's in last place when he actually like won the primary. So like they are trying every like mental gymnastic trick you can think of to make it look like Bernie lost. Did you see? Oh, Pete and Amy came in second and third. Did you see that?
Pete what?
Pete and Amy came in. Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. They came in second and third.
Second and third, where?
In New Hampshire. That's all they were talking about.
Oh, you mean what they're talking? Yeah, no, exactly.
Like,
exactly. Like, the big story, you know, I was going through looking at headlines.
The big story here is Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar came in second and third place.
Well, even more so, right? The Klobuchar-charged momentum of her campaign. I mean, really, the big story is Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because, like, she's, like, moving up on Pete Buttigieg. That's the big story.
Yeah.
Right, and there's someone else in the race who actually won the primary. I forget who that was, but let's talk about these other two because they're more in our lane.
Yeah, and then I mean, it's also funny, you know, Amy the Klobmentum, whatever, is about to get clobbered in the next week or so.
Well, we'll see. I'm not willing to say that she's gonna go that much. Look, I think that people are raising.
I'm waiting for the oppo to come out on her. I mean, there's enough out there. I mean, people know she has a horrible record as a prosecutor. She has voted for 2/3 of Trump judges and came out last week saying that we need to support pro-life Democrats.
Yep. I mean, No, we don't. I agree. I mean, I'm 100% with you on that one. But at the same time, I do not kind of underestimate like the kind of like delusions of kind of centrist and establishment Democrats to kind of say like, oh, my God, if the minute there's going to be a scratch on Buttigieg, which those scratches are starting to emerge, that they're going to start to look to Klobuchar as someone that they're going to kind of invest their narrative in. I mean, MSNBC is clearly doing that.
Yeah. And it is phenomenal. One of the things I think we should talk about, Ryan Grimm actually put this out. David Sirota pretty much single-handedly stopped Biden's momentum going into the past couple weeks.
Okay, make your case.
Well, like, so, I mean, he pretty much, like, Sirota and the Sanders Online Bernie Bro Death Squads.
Yeah, they call it the Central Park Committee. That's a new documents have revealed. That's the Central Park Committee is what it's called.
Yes. like, that pretty much Sirota and, like, others with it started using their platform on Twitter to tweet out, endlessly tweet out a stream of videos of Joe Biden supporting Medicare and Medicaid cuts and Social Security cuts. And I mean, this got people talking. It trickled upwards into the media and, like, it pretty much stopped his momentum. You think about it over the weekend, Van Jones said the same thing. Like, Buttigieg had a bit of a lead going into New Hampshire. And as soon as Bernie came out and said, you're backed by 44 billionaires, that pretty much put a brick wall to that.
Yep. Well, and the Van Jones thing, right, is like, you know, Sam Cedar had a good comment about that, too, as well. He said, look, you know, because, like, I mean, Van Jones is like, you know, he's a fair weather friend. Let's put it that way. Right. You know, like, Van Jones is about Van Jones. Right. in a large way. I mean, yes, he's on the kind of, like, liberal end of the spectrum. But what Sam Cedar said is, like, you know, the one good thing about Van Jones, him coming out doing that, it's like, you ever want to know which way the political winds are blowing, right? Look to Van Jones, right? And so Van Jones knows, right? I mean, that guy is smart. He's a smart operative. He's a smart kind of keeping it, you know, in the same kind of way that Obama was phenomenal in terms of branding and stuff like this. He recognizes this. The fact that he was on MSNBC kind of raising that question about, you know, the person we're not talking about here, who's actually got some of the momentum, is Bernie Sanders. And then you can feel, like, the room start to go, like, you know, like, cricketing. You know, it's like, wait, what did you say?
You know? Who's that? Never heard of him before.
Right, exactly.
Is he running for president? I heard he's...
right.
But also...
wait, that's thing. Not true.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
So the other thing that was awesome this week... was Chris Matthews' absolute freak out.
Holy cow.
But also, okay, I guess before we get into that, I absolutely love how Biden started off the New Hampshire debates by conceding that he wasn't going to win New Hampshire at all.
Yeah, it's like okay, this, so, you know, I lost in Iowa, probably going to lose here too. I'm not even going to stick around for my party. You know, screw all the people who have been on here campaigning for me. As soon as I'm off of this debate stage, I'm heading to South Carolina. Number one, exactly. It's a heck of a lot warmer. Number two, like, I don't have to deal with you people who are going to clearly pass me a loss.
Which I can't believe he's been doing that the whole entire campaign. We'll go vote for someone else. And people are voting for someone else. Like,
you're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
But, like, when he said that, I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. You put right in your opening statements, yeah, I'm not really paying attention to new fuckers up here in New Hampshire. I'm going straight to South Carolina, which is exactly what he did afterwards. Like, and then Chris Matthews is freaked out afterwards.
Holy moly. I mean, that was just, I mean, well, but you know what? I mean, I'm actually glad he did that. Like, at the,
actually called this after last week's podcast, the red baiting was going to happen at the
debate
that night.
Right. And they did, look, it's happening exactly as I said it would, right? Exactly as I said it would. And they're going so far in there, right? And this is like, I mean, I'm telling you, it's puts Trump right in the driver's seat with that kind of garbage.
Yeah. And really, it's not working either, which is the amazing thing. And what also, like, with this makes me wonder how many people within the progressive community, right, liberal-leaning progressive community, have just turned off MSNBC altogether?
Yeah.
Over the past couple of years.
Yep.
I mean, they're not a trusted news source anymore for me, by any means.
Like, no, look, I mean, and you know.
I mean,
like,
I'll listen in to hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
From time to time, but that's not – I don't sit there and watch Chris Matthews or Chris Hayes or Chuck Todd – or even Maddow at this point. I've stopped watching these people altogether.
Well, I'm telling you, I used to watch. That was part of my, like, daily routine. I would watch the Rachel Maddow show and then All In with Chris Hayes, right? And I have to say, this is hard for me because, like, I've loved Rachel Maddow, right? In terms of, like, just the way that she would break down and have this kind of analysis and all this stuff. And then once we got into the whole Russia stuff. Right. And then everything else that she did on that show just absolutely disappeared. I would joke about it on the show, basically saying, like, you know, look, it's like, you know, hey, I want to see what's happening on the Russiagate, like, front. So I'll go look at Maddow. But that now it's kind of like it feels like that she's just stuck in that model. Chris Hayes' show is probably the one spot left where, like, there's actually some rationality. Like, Chris Hayes is the one who called out, like, Matthews, like, who was basically saying that, you know, Matthews, I don't know if we could tell Bernie is, like, you know, the assassin, like, kill your enemies in Central Park, or if he's the Denmark guy. Right? And Chris Hayes is like, oh, he's clearly on the Denmark side.
I also loved how Bernie came out and just slapped Carville across the face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a hack.
You're nothing but a political hack.
Yeah.
which is like, hey, you want to piss someone off? Like, call a hack a hack. Yep. And they get very fucking defensive.
Yep,
and it's exactly. Also like, and Chris Carville, well, like, dude, you're just an asshole who has like two swanky mansions. Like, and it just amazes me that people still take Carville seriously.
Yep.
Like, he's like, yo, you said the same thing about Barack Obama 12 years ago. You're still a fucking hack now.
Yep. Like, yep. I mean, no, he peaked in the Clinton's first election.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he was a sharp political operative back then. But, you know, again, he was a sharp political operative in a particular political context. And, you know,
yeah, 30 years when the party was completely different.
That's exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But he hasn't moved while the rest of the world has. So that's the problem. But
did you ever see the this made me go back. Did you ever see the Family Guy episode with Carville?
No.
Pete's running. The guy, I guess Pete's the person, right? The father. Whatever.
I think so. I don't know. I don't really.
The
watch
father's
the show.
Running. For,
I'll
running
call my for, stepfather and I'll find out. You and him can compare notes.
So they have an episode of Carville and his eyes are getting sucked into his face. Like, all you see is like his eyes squinting, and like and Pete looks. Peter looks. I was like, I can't. He's like, I haven't seen this.
It's true, though. It is true. It's like, it's kind of disturbing to look at him. It's like a skull.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. So, like, I mean, and then also, I think the last good thing we should talk about before we go into doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Bernie with the union endorsements coming up. He got Nevada. I think got California teachers unions endorsing him, which is awesome.
Huge ones.
And I think what happened with the culinary union is a huge victory for Bernie.
Oh, I don't know if there's any other way to read it.
I mean, they chose not to endorse, which they were probably going to endorse Biden. And you got to think the rank and file members of the Unite Here put that to a stop, pretty much.
Well, like, I even think
leadership.
Look, the culinary union is like, they are super powerful, right? They are super organized, and they're phenomenal. I knew some people who worked with them for a while too as well. And you know, but they're, you know, they tend kind of like,
it's also a machine driven
right,
union.
Exactly.
Probably.
They tend to align along those lines. I think those folks at the point too as well were kind of like watching, you know, I think they're all lining up for Biden. I think that's exactly what the script was supposed to do. And then they saw what was going on with Biden. And they
fourth
were like
and fifth place.
Yeah, they're like, we are finishes. Not putting our name to that.
Yeah.
Right. Because that discredits them and lessens their power. But they've been, I mean, look, they've been an outspoken kind of like critic, like, of Medicare for All for a while. So this is not new. Right. And in part because it's exactly what you just pointed to. They're a machine driven organization. Right. And so part of what you bank on is that your exchange is what keeps your members, is that you're able to get them this good package.
And I also think it's some of the things we should talk about with this. I think it's unfair for Bernie supporters to go after the Taft-Hartley, whatever. What's that labor?
The Taft-Hartley Act?
Yeah. Well, they have a Taft-Hartley fund for their medical. So, like, that gets paid. But I saw back and forth online about this. Like, a lot of unions have that Taft-Hartley fund as a way to pay for their Medicare or their health care. And that gets contributions from the union and then from private sector, from the businesses that they associate with. And I think that some of them might get paid for sitting on that, but I know a lot, like, also seeing chatter, I know Steve Catanese put this on, is like, Steve Catanese is a board member of a Taft-Hartley healthcare funded program in Pennsylvania. He's like, listen, like, I'm supporting, like, he was going back and forth saying, I'm a union member, I'm a union leader, I support Medicare for All, but also, like, I sit on these boards, and it's like, be cautious of attacking these boards, because
right.
A lot of these are non-paid positions. Like, people are not profiting off of sitting on these Taft-Hartley boards.
No, like, no, right.
And it's like, you know, you should probably be, and then I also like what Eric Strobel from 668 put out on Twitter, especially responding to Buttigieg. He was just like, you know, he's like, I'm a local union organizer, negotiator here. If Medicare for All was an actual thing, it would make my union a lot stronger. It would make my job a hell of a lot easier.
Exactly.
And it would make our
I tell you that. I mean, I've said this before on the show too. Is like, you know, this is what we hear all the time as members of ABSCUF, right? When we're in kind of negotiations and things like this, is that the healthcare is always the thing that they hold, that the state holds to last, because they know it gives the most leverage over kind of the material gains we've got here. So basically, they hold healthcare over our heads, right? And basically said, well, unless you want to start paying a ton for your healthcare, you're gonna have to give on these other things. Right, you take healthcare out of the equation, and suddenly you're able to kind of like focus squarely on kind of like quality education, lower class size, like the things that are absolutely at the center of kind of what we should be negotiating for. Instead, it's about having to kind of like tiptoe around the healthcare question. You get Medicare for All, just takes all that shit off the table.
Yeah. So we got. And like my prediction's coming up. I think Bernie's going to win Nevada at this point. And regardless of what Bloomberg does, I think Sanders rolls through Super Tuesday.
Well, I think we'll see. We'll see. I think at this point he's going to be hard to beat in California, and that's going to be huge.
If he wins California and some other states, Colorado is now lining up,
yep,
is just swinging that way. It's going to be interesting. I think what
there's
we're
even
right
some
now,
favorable polling for him down in North Carolina too. I mean, he's not on top yet, but there's an uptick there too as well.
Yeah, and so now it's time to get to the big monkey in the room.
Wait, I got to do one more. I just want to reemphasize that Bernie Sanders is leading with 24.8% in the Nevada caucuses polling right now, according to 538. I just wanted to just one more like positive, and then the transition being that Bloomberg, unlike some of the other states, Bloomberg is still polling down below, way down below that at 8.4%. Deep breath. Here we go. Mike freaking plutocrat Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Or I guess we're not allowed to call him we're not supposed to call him a
he's a benevolent billionaire.
He's a benevolent. We're not supposed to call him
a plutocrat, oligarch.
We have to be nicer to him. We can't call him an oligarch. We have to call him something else. So do you see the video of that woman taking over the stage, kind of going up there? It's a plutocracy at the Mike Bloomberg event. I mean, seriously, that's what people need to be doing.
Yes. No. I think we have gotten past the point. I mean, I'll say this right off the bat. I'm having serious moral questions if he gets a nomination about voting for him. Like, I don't think people, you know, like, I will vote for any of the candidates that go through the primary process. I'll vote for Buttigieg. I'll vote for Biden, Sanders, Klobuchar. I'm a Sanders supporter. But there's no way I can probably vote for Bloomberg if he buys this election. Like, you're asking the electorate to choose between a proto-fascist and Donald Trump or a right-wing authoritarian in Mike Bloomberg.
Well, right. And we should
pretty much just, like, put a death nail in any, like, democratic norms that we have left in this country.
Well, and lose the election. I mean, and on top of it, because, look.
Bloomberg's going to get fucking smoked in the election if he gets this nomination.
Yeah, like, totally.
Like, I think the base doesn't come out and vote. But I'm always having these conversations with people who have been lifelong Democrats and lifelong Democratic voters and vote in every election or since they've been 18, and just like, Bloomberg's a step too far. Like, they will not vote for Bloomberg if he gets a nomination.
No, look,
and I feel like there's a lot of people out there who are like that.
Yeah, and look, I laid this out. This is the same thing I talked about after Trump's State of the Union. This is the perfect, and for the strategy, the two-pronged strategy that campaign is pursuing. Like, Bloomberg is in a sense the ideal candidate. You already see what Trump's people are doing. They're making these outreaches to kind of African American communities. Of course, it's absolute bullshit, right? I mean, anybody who thinks otherwise it's just absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
But they're positioning themselves and preparing to run to the left of centrist,
Bloomberg.
On race and on labor and on trade. And again, all those things is absolutely bullshit. It's just a rhetorical flourish. But nonetheless, that's what's going to happen.
But
and
also Bloomberg's record.
What's that?
Bloomberg has like one of the worst records out there.
That's exactly.
All those things. He's against minimum wage. He stood up for Rick Snyder after he signed Right to Work into law and gave him millions of dollars for his reelection campaign in Michigan.
Yeah, the guy who poisoned Flint's water supply. Let's just be clear who we're talking about.
Yes, and the guy who broke the unions.
Yep.
Like, he gave Pat Toomey the Senate seat and potentially gave Republicans Pennsylvania because of this.
Yep.
You know, because of the $11 million he pumped into his super PAC.
Yeah, 4 years ago, everybody. Not like ancient history. 4 years ago he did this.
And he's an unrepentant racist. Like, I mean, like, the people who are supporting Bloomberg, the Democrats who are supporting Bloomberg, the people who are from previous administrations and are part of the establishment and are flocking to Bloomberg, these are people who are white, they're privileged, and they will not feel the effects of a Bloomberg presidency. They will continue to get wealthier, they will continue to get the contracts they need, and they will not see the systematic racism or the selling out of the Democratic base if he is to get president, become the president.
Right.
I mean, that's the most infuriating part, right? Like today, Jared Solomon from Philadelphia, the Democrat from Philadelphia, came out and supported Bloomberg in an 80% minority district he represents.
Yep. Yep. But I mean, just put that out. I will have to say, this is going to be the cover that Bloomberg is going to try to do. Look, one of the things is that this is some of the reporting. Again, this is Ryan Grimm's reporting, also reporting in the New York Times, and also the what's his name? Zeff. That was his first name there. Blake Zeff, New York City journalist, who's been kind of laid out the Bloomberg's playbook there too as well. Because Bloomberg has basically a bottomless bucket of money. Is that, and he's got this kind of like mayor's like fund or whatever like this. He's floods tons of money into mayors and is bringing them kind of on board, right? So that's why you got Michael Nutter down here in Philadelphia, right? Kind of like shilling for Bloomberg right now is because Bloomberg spread his money around. And so what Bloomberg will target is kind of like African American mayors, African American kind of leaders in particular communities, and just pour tons of money into them, right? In exchange for them trying to get some of their folks kind of on board, because it's a really there's been some interesting reporting about this about how there's some splits in the kind of African American community, especially generationally, right? Because in some of these communities, like Bloomberg has literally poured tons of money in, right? And that's what they know him for. And for a lot of folks, for people, stop and frisk is not something that they were experiencing as much as they were in New York City, right? So Bloomberg is making a strong play here.
It'll be interesting because like what happens on the grassroots level, like. A lot of the people who are invested in other candidates in these groups like Moms Demand Action, the groups that he's funded, they're absolutely pissed that he's running for office.
Yes.
Like, I don't think – no, he's not going to win. Like, that's it. Like, and the people who are supporting him are the people who have benefited under Trump. They they will not feel the effects of a Bloomberg presidency. They will not feel the authoritarianism. They won't feel the over-policing of minority communities. They won't feel the spying on Muslims. I mean, like the overt sexism, the racism. You would write down the line his unwillingness to raise the minimum wage, his attacking of the transgender community. Like, come on. Like, this is who you're going to pick? It goes against everything the Democratic Party stands up for. And they deserve to fall on their face if they support them.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And more of this stuff is going to come out. And like, the fact that there are establishment Democrats who especially folks coming out of the kind of Clinton machine that are kind of trying to make a case for Bloomberg. Let me just give you an example here, too, as well. There's an article that was published in GQ by Laura Bassett. Right. The racist stuff, his like you said, unapologetic racist. I mean, that stuff is just going to continue to pour out because that was what he made his brand on. But here's, for example, this is from Laura Bassett's article in GQ. It says in December 2015, employees for Every Town for Gun Safety, the gun control organization funded by Mike Bloomberg, arrived at work to find a holiday gift on their desk from their employer, the former mayor's 1997 autobiography, Bloomberg by Bloomberg. Flipping through the book, staffers found themselves uncomfortably reading their billionaire's funders boast about keeping a girlfriend in every city and other womanizing exploits from the as a wall as a Wall Street up-and-comer. And then, quote, a few people started immediately going through it and sending the cringiest parts around an email change, one former Everytown employee told me. Hardly the most controversial things he said, but still, it's a bad look. And then here's this one other part I want to read, and they'll go here. This is also talk about the redlining that he was behind and all this. So, but it takes a telling amount of gall and cluelessness to gift a book with anecdotes about your own womanizing to employees at your gun safety nonprofit in the year 2015, especially for a politician with presidential ambitions who has been vigorously denying allegations of misogyny throughout his entire career, including nearly 40 sex discrimination and sexual harassment lawsuits brought against him and his organizations by 64 women over the past several decades. Right. So there's these centrist establishment Democrats who are basically, well, Bloomberg, you know, he's our billionaire. That's how is that different? He is a more competent Trump. And that is it. And I think you put it right, Sean, is that you got a freaking, you know, a kind of wannabe proto kind of clown fascist. Right. And a kind of like an efficient authoritarian billionaire. I mean, that is bad. And when you put things in that perspective, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what is an actual irrational decision in that place? Right. I mean, cause I was with you. I mean, same thing. It was like, look, I'll vote for a door. Right. But like, I didn't think I was going to have to vote for the devil himself. You know what I'm saying? And that's a different thing because that it's very hard to make a case that Bloomberg is better than Trump. Especially yeah. if you're African American, especially if you're a woman, especially if you are
an immigrant,
especially if you're an
insanely
a
racist
worker.
Thing about undocumented immigrants.
I mean, dude, he sent spies into Muslim churches and summer camps. I mean, he had an intelligence.
He arrested over 2,000 activists, so simply they weren't around the weekend of the RNC in 2004.
Exactly.
He's used repressive police state tactics against any community possible that were not white or left leaning group in New York. Like
he poached CIA intelligence officers to set up a New York City intelligence committee to infiltrate Muslim community organizations in New York. I mean,
spies were on whitewater rafting trips.
Exactly.
To see which Muslim.
Well, his daughter didn't see anything.
Yeah,
he's disgusting, man.
And it's amazing, like, people are just embracing this guy with an open arm because he has the most money to spend.
Look, if Bloomberg gets the nomination, it will be the undoing, the final undoing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I don't think the Democratic Party rebounds if they.
No way.
I think you cleave off half the party at that point.
I don't see what else you can do.
I mean, he's not going to be standing up for labor. If you're a union, let's play this game. If you're a politically savvy union, right, and you get out in front, you endorse Biden, you endorse Clinton, simply because of transactional terms, you're betting on that they're going to win, and you know that they're going to be you can pull their ear on most issues,
yep,
and get what you need 80% of the time, or stop bad things from happening,
right?
That's the reason why you endorse, and you're afraid of retribution.
Yep.
Right. That's the reason why you endorse these candidates. Like, are you telling me that unions are going to fucking endorse Bloomberg if he gets nomination? Like, do you think they have the faith in him to like to protect workers in this country?
Oh no, but they'll try. I guarantee it. You watch it. They'll try.
I don't think so. I think we saw it this week with the reaction from the Sanders is pretty much what happened with the culinary union. And spiking Biden's endorsement.
Yep.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know, man. That man, you know, look, I don't follow Michael Bloomberg. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I could care less about him as a human being. That wasn't in New York City. I know people, if you were in New York or you're around New York and things like this, Bloomberg, I mean, people have deep, deep, deep kind of stories and arguments about Bloomberg and things like this for absolute justified reasons, right? Just in terms of the stop and frisk stuff that was kind of blowing my mind, kind of going through some of the stats. He makes this claim that he told journalists, he was asked a question about stop and frisk, and he said when he took office, that was already in place, and then he started to de-escalate it. That's not what the data shows. The data shows that kind of the number of stops actually increased to the point where there were, I mean, think about this. They were in like a 1 mile square area. 1 mile square area. There were like 1,000 stop and frisks per day. Per day.
Yes. He stopped and frisked more African-American men between the ages of 15 and 35 that were actually living in the city.
Yep.
In a year.
And like again, Sam Cedar broke this down. He kind of broke out some of the stats that show that there was, at this one point there was like, you know, 1,000 stop and frisks a day, right? You're talking well over 300,000 stop and frisks throughout the year. And what did they find? Because the whole premise was like we had to get the guns, right? About 800 guns, right? For over 300,000 and the vast majority of those, right? I mean, like the tiny percent. It was like 0.01%. Although stops and frisks produced anything. And what do you do in the meantime to get that 0.01%? Right? You terrorize a community. Terrorize. Like, and that is, I don't know what else you call that. And for him, it's a rational, like, calculation. This guy is a freaking alien robot that needs to be stopped. But, I don't know, man. Pretty bad. It's pretty bad. And I don't know what to do, Sean. I'll be honest with you. So, you know, I have a hard time just like just even having a civil conversation with people who call themselves Democrats to even be considering Bloomberg. And I understand that there's a lot of people out there that are low information voters that are just seeing things that are on the TV and they don't know this stuff yet. So I always have to remind myself of that. But if you are an existing,
I'm getting into it right now with someone on Twitter.
Oh, there you go.
Some like writer from the mainline, Bryn Mawr, is telling me, well, you shouldn't be attacking Bloomberg so much. It's like, listen, I don't need some mainline liberal telling me not to attack
Bloomberg. Are you kidding me? Are you serious?
And they said, really, way to keep things civil. I said, only privileged people will support Bloomberg because they will not have to deal with his racism, sexism, transphobia, and hatred for workers.
Bingo. There you go. Everybody over at @RCPress_Sean right now, and you can join in the fun. Oh, my God.
I think they might have actually blocked me, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. So, yeah, anyway. So, I mean, look, if you call yourself – I mean, this is what I'm saying. If you're even – it's one thing if you're a low-information voter and all you see is the TV commercials and he seems like a nice person, right? You know, because based upon those commercials, because he's got unlimited amount of funds that he can buy those up. That's one thing. If you are a Democratic Party kind of like operative, right, or if you work with the Democratic Party
– or a rich liberal –
or a rich liberal, and you know about this stuff, right? You have no excuse. You have no excuse. This is like you, if you vote for Bloomberg and promote Bloomberg online, you will be responsible for the destruction of the Democratic Party. You will be responsible for that. And if he gets elected, God forbid, just like Trump.
And nailing the final coffin, and putting the final nails in like any standard democratic norms that we have left. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, you saw what happened with Trump this week. We're not talking about it, but I mean, like he's also an authoritarian. You have two authoritarians going up against each other. One wants to be next Julius Caesar, pretty much.
Yep.
The other one is a fucking proto-fascist buffoon. Like, yep. No. Why should we have to cast our vote for this?
No way.
Yeah,
no way. And I'll tell you, you know, there's some folks that have been looking at, you know, Naomi Klein has talked about this quite a bit, too, in terms of, like, say, climate change stuff. Right. And I should say, I didn't put this in the notes today, but Antarctica just yesterday, they released data from Antarctica and they found for the first time in history. Right. Temperatures topped 20 degrees Celsius. So kind of close to 70 degrees. Right. And so that just gives you a sense of kind of like how bad the climate stuff is. And what Naomi Klein says, you know, is basically, look, there's two pathways here. It's either that we get the movement right for something like as transitional as a Green New Deal. Right. Or the other solution that people will start gravitating towards. Right. Is going to be these kind of like eco-fascists. Right. That basically people said and they'll use the climate crisis as a justification to consolidate power and install themselves as the kind of like the Green King. You know, I mean, I'm not king. I'm not saying king, but an authoritarian kind of, say, Green King. I mean, it's not good. So, I mean, that's real. I mean, that is coming fast. Right? You already see this creeping up in kind of in places or kind of around the world as a discourse. And, you know, some people use Bloomberg set points to say, well, Bloomberg's good on climate. And so they start looking to him as like, well, this is the compromise. If we're going to save the planet, we got to go with the authoritarian fascist. No, we don't.
Yeah.
Right. So anyways, like I said, I don't think I'm going to get all into all this stuff on what Trump did this week. I mean, but seriously, pay attention to what's going on in the Justice Department because it's pretty freaking scary. And I think this is also a setup for what's going to happen in 2020 in terms of litigation that we can expect kind of moving forward once we get a nominee from the Democratic Party. So I don't know if you got any comments on that, Sean, but.
Comments on what?
Just the federal prosecutors quitting, the Vindman stuff, the Roger
Stone
case.
Is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
It is what it is, and like, yeah. I just can't believe like half the party lost their fucking mind over Bloomberg or a large chunk of the party is like wanting to go down this road.
It's disturbing. It's disturbing. And it's like, it, I'm telling you, it's like, it's a drama that never quite disappoints, I guess, because around every corner, there's a new twist that's even darker than the one that we just lived through. And this is one of them. I mean, this is like, it's amazing. It's amazing to be like in the kind of like, you know, Rick Smith, we always talk about this, the Stockholm syndrome. It's like, if this is not the kind of like, you know, the clean and shiny Stockholm syndrome, right, where you get all the kind of like the nice kind of neat kind of like kind of, I don't know, kind of data driven, semi liberal, professional class people getting behind Bloomberg because they're going to be fine. This is, whoa, I don't even know what to do with that. Anyways, so I'm just going to wrap this up here. So I'm kind of on a little bit on a timeline today, too, as well. So I don't want to kind of go off too much on the other stuff, which is why I don't want to start talking about what's going on with Trump, because I know I will inevitably cause problems. But before we go into the break, I want to say one. The best way you can help keep the movement, frustrated right about now. The best way you can help support the work that we do at Raging Chicken Press is by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. We're going to leave you with I got some great feedback about this, about the music from a friend of the show, Ben. This is Quid Pro Quo we're going to leave you with. Thank you all for the feedback who said you kind of like the tunes. And then I'm going to try to kind of poke at Ben and see if he'll, maybe give us some additional tracks. We'll mix it up here for you. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1818. That was the day that abolitionist Frederick Douglass chose to celebrate his birthday. He could not be sure of the exact date of his birth because he was born into slavery. He escaped from slavery and became one of the leading black writers and orators for the cause of abolition. After the Civil War, he continued to speak and write, demanding justice for African Americans and working people. For example, in 1871, he penned an article against increasing demands for cheap labor. He wrote, "Cheap labor is a phrase that has no cheering music for the masses. Those who demand it and seek to acquire it have but little sympathy with common humanity. It is the cry of the few against the many. When we inquire who are the men who are continually vociferating for cheap labor, we find the rich and powerful, the crafty and scheming, those who live by the sweat of other men's faces, and who have no intention of cheapening labor by adding themselves to the laboring forces of society. It is the deceitful cry of the fortunate against the unfortunate. Labor is a noble word and expresses a noble idea. Today, we still face a demand for ever cheaper labor. Business leaders and their political friends fight against efforts to raise the minimum wage. From 2011 to 2015, 8 states scaled back their prevailing wage laws, 19 reduced pensions, and 15 eroded collective bargaining rights. As these attacks on working people grow, it seems that Frederick Douglass's reminder that labor is a noble word is needed now more than ever.
We plant the food, we drive the cab, we load the
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens, Out the Coop Podcast. This is Kev Mahoney, who's sitting here with Sean Kitchen once again. And this time we actually have our recorder going and everything like this, so we're going to hear Sean from, like, in the first part and the second part. Again, my apologies last week. At least I caught it before we went into the stuff on PA stuff. But a lot of stuff going on this week, Sean. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, where do we want to start?
why don't we start with the easy stuff? Why don't we start with the Senate pro tempore?
So Joe Scarnati announced this week that he will be resigning. This has me kind of worried.
Has you worried?
Well, not worried, but, like, I have a feeling nothing's going to get done next session. Taking back the Senate is going to be a really hard lift for the Democrats. They essentially need to go 5-for-5 with the seats that they're targeting. And with Yudichek resigning, you really don't know what's going to happen. But, like, you just lost Drew Crompton, who is Scarnati's chief of staff for 20-some years. You're losing Scarnati, and you're going to lose whatchamacallit. You're going to lose. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at. I'm getting distracted.
Yes, you are.
Also, you're losing Mike Terzak, and then you lost a bunch of key staffers over the past year in the Republican caucuses on both sides. There's going to be a power vacuum that's going to need to be filled, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, like, some of the conservative Republicans who just got onto the Senate this past year spiked a non-controversial resolution to honor a Valentine's Day ball at the somewhere in Doylestown near where you're at. There's this house that is funded through Planned Parenthood, and had an LGBTQ prom every year on the day before Thanksgiving. And they asked their Senator Santa Ciro and Wendy Ullman, state rep, for resolutions. And the Senate, you know, they spiked the resolution because two senators or one senator voiced objection to it. And usually these are non-controversial voice votes. So these are the type of people who are going to be gaining power once the Senate gets, you know, once this stuff happens. They're going to become more empowered. And then Chris Dush, who was running for Auditor General, Scarnati told him he wasn't going to be resigning this year. And so Dush announced that he was running for Auditor General. And now Dush is so apoplectic about this, he's now running for Senate because Scarnati basically lied to his face. So Dush is the House representative who put out the calls to impeach all of the Supreme Court justices who voted in favor of the gerrymandering reforms, the gerrymandering case last year. So this, there's going to be two other people running in the race. The money's not going to go behind Dush, but he's going to try to get to win the primary for this. So,
So it's not just that. So then this is more than just, like, things might not get done, but it has a potential of kind of getting more
divided. The new maps.
Yeah.
Before gerrymandering happens next year and all. I mean, I think these people are leaving. They're getting off. I mean, if Scarnati was to run, he was going to get toppled with new maps in 2022. I mean, this is the reason why these people are resigning. They know they're going to lose power, and they're not going to get power back quickly. So they're all jumping ship.
Might as well get their post-political career jobs now before they lose any lose their clout.
Yeah, so yeah,
makes sense.
So there's a mass exodus of Republican leadership happening in Pennsylvania. So
there you go. There you go. Mm-hmm. We'll see you that. I just want to mention this again. I know I said this already, but if you can't stand Pat Toomey and you're fluting with Bloomberg, you need help. You suck. Okay? Get some help and get back on track. Just saying that because Bloomberg gave us Pat Toomey. So Tuesday with Toomey. Yep, that's right. Tuesday with Toomey is like Tuesday with Bloomberg, right? Same thing. So those folks out there are fighting for Toomey, or those folks out there fighting for Bloomberg. And if you happen to be someone in the center of Democrats, right, and you don't like Toomey, well, guess what? Get out on the street with the people from Tuesday with Toomey, because they understand the connection to Bloomberg, right? So, yeah. Just going to say that again. I can't say that. Not enough. So the big story that I really want to dig into just a bit here is that what's happening out there in the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council based out of Pittsburgh. We know that we saw Summer Lee kind of win. You know, she represents Braddock, PA, again, where John Fetterman comes out of. And we covered this extensively on the podcast, right? Sean and I were kind of went to one of their fundraisers where it Elizabeth Fiedler, Summer Lee, and who else was there at that one, Sean?
Summer Lee, Sarah Nimrodo, and Elizabeth
Fiedler. Sarah Nimrodo was there. Right, of course. So the three of them, right, we met them, and they swept an office, remember? And Sarah Nimrodo and Summer Lee and Elizabeth Fiedler, right, all of them were backed by DSA, right? And so these are folks that are kind of like super progressive, young, kind of representative, actually more representative of their communities. Braddock, right, was 66% black and had been represented for years by, you know, the white Democrat and that kind of political machine, the Costas.
And Paul Costa is now a lobbyist with one of the worst fucking Republican firms in the state.
Exactly. Right. So there you go.
he's part of the money party, the Green Party.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, so we see what's happening.
He's probably a Bloomberg supporter.
Right. And the thing is, like, you know, what this basically exposes is, well, I mean, the point being is that now you got the Central Labor Council, the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council now is kind of going all in against Summer Lee's opponent, right, our primary challenger. And so, you know, what this really does is it exposes the kind of like the ugly underbelly, so to speak, of and aspects of the labor movement.
I'm not surprised by this. I had a really interesting conversation with a person last year, and more of a semi-professional setting. You know, at the time, I was looking for jobs, and I was getting interrogated about my support of Summer Lee by this person. And this was completely inappropriate line of questioning for this type of conversation we were having. I'm going to try to be as vague as possible.
That's fine.
But the disdain from the white political establishment from this part of Pennsylvania towards Summer Lee is real.
Yep.
And I mean, we're seeing it now. Like, she lives in a minority city. You know, most of the people most of these union workers who are white, who are most likely Trump supporters, do not live within her district and do not live within Braddock.
Right.
But they work within Braddock. And they are upset with her because she took U.S. Steel to task over the past couple of years for all the pollution that they are causing within the Mon Valley.
Yep.
And this is complete retribution to her. Even though Sarah Nimrodo has pretty much made the same remarks and who is also ingrained by the Democratic establishment, I mean, and who has pretty much the same remarks, is the same record as Summer Lee. But Summer Lee has been more forceful with this stuff, where, you know, Sarah has been really good with going into the system, getting into different spots. But I mean, like, their records are exactly the same, and to me this is happening because she dared challenge people for her community.
Yeah, and she was very public about it. I mean, I think Summer Lee is arguably the most like progressive and activist oriented representative in the state right now.
Yes, of the three who got elected.
Right.
Yes. And this is complete retribution for her to speak out against U.S. Steel and all the pollution they were causing, months of just spewing particulate matter into the atmosphere because one of their scrubbers was broken, and there was no political leadership to force this plant to shut down while this was happening because the union was screaming about jobs.
Yep.
While everyone in her area was getting sick.
Yep.
And this is complete retribution for that.
Right. And this shows you the way that the discourse, that we would get locked into this idea about jobs, about how there's especially when you're talking about an extractivism state like Pennsylvania, right, is that the what's beneath that jobs is a racist structure, right?
And also, we should talk about, like, the stance that Lieutenant Governor and others have taken, which they're telling people to vote their jobs, which is code word for complete disregard for the environment.
Right.
Frack away.
Yep.
And get every inch of every cubic foot of gas you can get out of the ground.
Yep.
And that's when they're telling people to vote their jobs, not the environment.
Right.
Like,
as if support. I mean, again, we've talked about this endlessly on the show. I mean, they think, like, the Green New Deal, right, an investment in kind of like alternative energy and all this stuff could be a huge, enormous boon. But the power of the fossil fuel industries in this state, and the fact that we got a governor who's cozied up to that fossil fuel industry, right, and has built cracker plants out there by Pittsburgh, right, and has got it going all in on pipelines and all this other kind of stuff, is not helping matters, right? It's distracting from, like, the crisis that is staring us right in the face. And this is, and what the fact that now you've got, like, you know, the power of labor. And again, I am a labor guy through and through, right? But there have always been divisions within the labor movement, right? There's been divisions that are along lines of race, and there's divisions that are along lines of how we run our unions. Do we run them as top-down business unions or bottom-up rank-and-file-based organizations, right? This has always happened within the labor movement. If you're a reader of Labor Notes, you know what I'm talking about, right? Matter of fact, this weekend, I didn't mention this, there's a Labor Notes training going on at Kutztown University campus too as well, right? And there's different models of that. You can cozy up with the legislatures and play an inside game and try to do the whole professional stuff and tell your members what they need to know, or you can actually start with the membership and build your power base up there. What we see happening out there in with the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council going against Summer Lee is a perfect example of the ways that kind of they're going for their narrow self-defined interests first at the expense of everyone else around. And that is like, you might as well kind of start building the coffins for the labor movement now, right? That's got to end.
Yeah.
So if if you're looking out there, you're looking for a candidate support in the state, right? In addition to kind of like the national politics right now, give to Summer Lee. Help support Summer Lee and help support her candidacy. And we'll kind of continue to tell you about the candidates that we need to get behind here, because she really is one of the strongest voices right now in the Pennsylvania House. So I'm crazy. As a related matter, that's the reason why I put all this other stuff in here about the pipeline stuff, right? It's just to kind of underscore exactly this fact, right? So you're talking about, like, right out in western Pennsylvania too as well, right? Or western leaning Pennsylvania, where you got 3 years ago now, that you had a kind of list, the Mariner East 2 pipeline, where they're fined $15 million because they spilled more than 208,000 gallons of drilling fluid in a lake, in Reyestown Lake, right? And this is just one of the many fines that got here. So one of the most kind of fine pipelines kind of like in recent history. It's pretty incredible. And this is polluting it, and they're having to pay these fines, yet they keep on getting repermitted. They keep on letting go. And now you've got warnings now in Delaware County, the other end of the state, right? Basically saying, look, this pipeline, if there's a crack in this pipeline, there's a spill in this pipeline, is that we're going to have kind of a huge impact to people in the county, especially as Delaware County has become more and more densely populated. Right. So, I mean, people are raising concerns all over the place, and we have to stop this stuff. I mean, I don't even know the way around it. And the fact that you've got people that are trying to put their clout, right, behind a candidate that is trying to basically go all in for the Green New Deal and get us past this is just, I mean, it's like shoot yourself in the foot. I mean, it's and not to mention, like, all sorts of problematic when it comes to sort of building a movement on the Democratic Party. It's disgusting to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It's just pretty good. So, I mean, do check out the Payday Report is Mike Elk's newsletter.
I'm a member.
Oh, I'm sorry, what?
I am a member of his Payday Report. So
there you go.
I think you all should join.
Yeah, and he's actually from out that way, and he discloses that in there, right? He's from out that way, and he's reporting on it, so he knows the situation pretty directly. So you can check out
Out Ryan Dedo's work at the City Paper out there too, because he's been covering this for a while as well.
Well, there you go. I mean, do check out that stuff. If you got a link, Sean, if you could put that, if you throw it in somewhere in that notes, that'd be awesome. Even if at the end of that paragraph we got in the show notes, and I'll put it in the rest of the show notes for the rest of it, it'd be great. Just other kind of brief mentions that I've got here is that I was pretty excited about this. This just happened last week, where they got the poll moved back to campus. Kutztown University campus, they took away the polling place. It used to be in Keystone Hall, which is the big kind of sporting arena there. And there's all sorts of kind of weird arguments that were being used about why this is moving off. Now, keep in mind, this was happening at the same exact time that we saw all attempts of about voter oppression happening across the country. Right. So that, and it was part of the kind of, you know, Koch funded playbook to take polling places and move them off college campuses where they were, especially their state campuses, and move them farther away, making it more difficult for college students to get there. So when they first moved the polling place, and it literally came out of the blue, I got nothing back.
Voter suppression tactics?
Yes, exactly. And so we had our faculty union joined with some student leaders who marched from the university campus to where the polling place used to be out to the new polling place. And you had to walk on like a two-lane highway with traffic, with, you know, tractor-trailer truck whizzing by you like 2 to 3 feet next to you in order to get to that. Right? The only way to get there was to walk there if you didn't have a car. Right. So we fought, our local faculty union fought to get buses, and we started, you know, kind of working with the student student government in order to kind of fund buses to make sure those students get out there. And finally, we were able to convince our university to actually fund those buses out there. But still, right, anytime you put a hurdle, and this is what the Koch brothers understood for a long time, anytime you put a hurdle in front of any group of people, right, it's going to suppress the vote. And that was part of that goal. And so that got moved off, and it got, you know, again, Maxtone Township building out there, and it's been an ongoing fight. And it's kind of like, you know, it's Eric Johnson, who is on he's a board member, I think a board of Kutztown City Council maybe or something like this, but he has been actively working to get the polling place moved back. And you've had student leaders who have been kind of incessant. I think it's the kind of work that is not in the spotlight, but nonetheless has been going on, kind of relentlessly going on. And they finally convinced this past week. I had Addison, who's he's an activist on campus. He spoke for there. Some people from that are working with the Sunrise Movement kind of went and spoke in support of students. Eric Johnson was there speaking on behalf of students, and they convinced the Berks County Election Board to actually move that polling place back. And so it's going back, and there's going to be a kind of easier access for students to vote. And frankly, it's going to increase the amount of security and safety of the thing. The Maxtone Township building was like literally in the middle of nowhere. Right. And the poor lighting, a whole bunch of stuff was problematic with that place. Right. So if you want to park there, you had to walk through a dark parking lot in order to get there. So it was crazy. Here you actually can have, it's easy to police, make sure there's adequate parking. People can get in and out. It's all handicap accessible, all that kind of stuff. So kudos to all those folks who have been fighting for this. And lastly, also from Kutztown University, I've been part of this campaign, launched a Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, which is pretty awesome, because what the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights does, it actually calls for healthy working and learning conditions, right? Because we know, you've heard us talk about the mold on campus and the kind of decrepit buildings on our campus. So that's there. Talking about investing in community's financial help, meaning things like student debt, right? Being an advocate for free college tuition, and investing in a campus infrastructure that get off fossil fuels by 2030. You're going to be hearing a lot more about this. We've got some kind of launch events that are going to be coming out. I'll let everybody know about this. We had some kind of recent connections with some folks, once again, in the Sunrise Movement, which will be awesome, and some labor organizing, like with our faculty union and some other faculty unions that were, or other kind of campus unions, were kind of working together to see this as an opportunity to kind of redefine what our campus can be. So pretty awesome. Anything else at PA, Sean?
No, that's it.
All right, cool. All right, so this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to take a real quick break and give you a very, very quick last call today, and then we'll be out of here. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press.
For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's today's last call. We talk beer news, we talk space news, although no space news today, and we talk whatever else is kind of on their mind. And sometimes there is late breaking news that comes in the last call. Sean Kitchen to you.
What's that?
Sean is basically, no, he's, I was going to basically say, look, here's what I was trying to do. I was trying to lead it in to say that Sean has got some juicy stuff that he's going to be putting in his newsletter, which is about to re-release, so you better subscribe to his newsletter. Right?
I am so hard at promoting myself. So
oh, my God.
Myself.
I swear to God. He's like freaking deer in the headlights. I'm like, give him the dish, and this is what happens. You're like, what? What are you talking about? We had just talked about it on the break, and I'm like.
But yeah, I got a really racist mailer sent to me used by a congressman in the area, so I'll be putting that shit on blast.
Check out his newsletter where you can read more. That's how it works, Sean.
Yes.
Speaking of newsletters.
Yeah, I fell behind last week. I actually got swamped with a lot of work. I actually had to edit a lot of photos last week, and I spent most of my time culling photos. So it's actually a fun story because it's worth it. SEIU, Budget Day, I followed around home healthcare workers, took around like 700 photos from like following them around all day, spent all week culling the images, editing them, and dwindling down to like my 20 to 30 best and favorite images. Handed them over to them this week, and the communications director from SEIU Healthcare, Karen, she reached out to me later on that day, like, oh my God, these photos are amazing. And they want to frame them and hang them on the wall once their offices are getting rebuilt.
That's
done,
awesome.
Renovating. So they asked for permission. I said, oh, absolutely.
Fantastic, Sean. That's great, man. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
no, I'm looking forward to like seeing which ones they pick.
Is there going to be like a big signing ceremony and stuff like this? You can do ribbon cutting and
no, but what I think I'm going to do to help my like promotion strategies, get a picture of myself holding the photos when they're ready to get to hang them up on the wall and then put that on social media. But
yeah, don't forget, if you do that, make people let them know. It's like, hey, these are my photos.
Yes.
You, if you are interested in,
yes,
check out my newsletter where you can get more information about how to hire me.
Yeah, right? But what's awesome about this event, or I pretty much was with following him around all day, so I now have enough money stored away in my nest egg, my savings, to, one, pay off my credit card within a couple months. I should have a bunch of money left over from taxes, because I've been really good with keeping that aside throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be able to buy a full-frame camera and a lens.
Dun, dun, dun!
Probably by like April or May,
man,
which is awesome.
Christmas in well, not July, May, right? Christmas in May or April. That's nice.
But no, it's been something I've been saving up for, something I've been wanting for a while, and like quit my after Christmas was really just buckling down, putting money away, and yeah, it feels good finally being at that point, like of having a professional full frame camera. And then maybe get a couple nice lenses with it. So
yeah, imagine how much more money you would have if you didn't have to keep on rebuying stouts for your mom.
Which I did not. I have to go back to Pizza Boy and still get them.
That's awesome.
So
yeah.
I'll be doing that this week. I also like got back onto like my diet plan this week. So I have not like gone. I've only been to the bar once all week, and I made a 12 pack last me from Sunday through like pretty much today. So,
well, just to check. I mean, so when you like, you know, you set up your calendars, do you start your week on Thursday or do you start on Sunday? So when you say if you haven't been there all week, is like, I'm just trying to get a sense of what we're talking about.
Okay. So like, I was out last Saturday, and then I didn't go out till Thursday last night. So
okay, there you go. All right.
Yeah, and I'm back on schedule. You know, cooking 6 nights a week, all that fun stuff, and nice. Back at the gym and all. So nice. I'm already starting to feel it in my shirts and hoodies. So
there you go.
Progress, man.
Look,
it's amazing.
That.
Like
you're back. You're back on your plan. We've effectively like purge the Bloombergisms out of us today. I think we're ready for the weekend. I think this is pretty good.
Yeah. It was actually pretty funny. I posted a picture of did you see what Bizarro commented on one of my I posted a picture no. chicken dish up last week. And he said that he's like, I don't know what's gotten into you. He's like, you got a suit and now you're cooking all the time. He's like, I don't even know who you are anymore. Yeah.
Next thing you know, you'll be baking.
Baking what?
Just bake. Oh, well, you already do that, I guess. You'll be baked, I should say. All right. Well, I'm going to have to wrap this up. We're going to get going. So I want everybody, two new free will announcements this week. Got some releases. I'm just going to read you right directly from the descriptions. One is called Blueberry Mash, the Return of Blueberry Mash, which is freaking awesome. It's a sour ale brewed with 3,400 pounds of blueberry puree, vanilla, and milk sugar. It's an original mash of pillowy, soft-bodied, and fruit-forward with tangy blueberry notes, rounded out with a touch of vanilla and sweetness. They're shelf-stable at room temperature, and it comes in at 7.5 ABV. And then they also have however you say this. It's an American porter. It's brewed with a wide array of specialty malts.
That sounds like the shark game?
I don't know. Tuku-tuku.
Oh, come on, the kids game with the sharks. With the shark song.
What? Mommy shark.
Yeah, like that right there, baby shark.
Oh, okay, there you have it.
Well, like, I thought you were just trying to play baby shark like in your...
Oh, I wasn't, but I didn't realize. But now that'll actually help me remember it, I think. But that's good. But anyway, it's an American porter brewed with a bunch of specialty malts, hopped with Pilgrim and Liberty, and its notes of baker's chocolate, toasted biscuit, and a strong cold brew. Comes in at 7% ABV. It's actually really, really good. I was really surprised at this last year at the release, so definitely check that out. It's totally worth it. And on March 1st, we'll talk more about this coming up too as well, but Free Will just announced the event that they will be having the Spirit of Mardi Gras event that will be on March 1st, and it is a barrel-aged bonanza. And this is how they're pitching it. So they're just showcasing their clean barrel-aged beer program, tapping 10 different barrel-aged beasts. They're taking several versions of Ralphius and Ella, which will be amazing, plus some other favorites from the past couple of years, and look for the full tap soon. They're also going to have food from Trey locally sourced there for food trucks, and serving up a whole bunch of Nolans dishes classics for there. So pretty good. Pretty cool. I was going to mention one thing about that, and now it just went out of my head again, once again. I should have mentioned, well, we're going to talk about this the show next week, too, as well, is that the PA Progressive Summit is back, right?
Yes. Yes. So, like, it did not miss a year. Last year, they changed the formats. Right. It was in Pittsburgh at the IBEW Hall. And it, it's more training focused this year.
Yep.
Or been years before, and they did a really good job at bringing in younger people, bringing in more of your younger operatives. It was a lot more diverse than years past, and a whole hell of a lot younger, like younger period.
Awesome.
There's going to be a special guest. I really can't tell you who the keynote's going to be, but you know, you might have heard of him a bit.
No, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, sometimes they get these people that are kind of obscure. But I just know that when Keystone Progress has kind of like held stuff in the past, they've got some freaking bang up speakers to give keynotes. And so I suspect,
with it being a presidential year,
we're going to be in some pretty good shape. So
yeah, I think like the last time there was a presidential year,
Cecile Richards
spoke. A lot of other amazing people spoke. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And
so definitely check it out. We'll talk more about it next week, so we can put that actually at the front of the show to make sure that it's getting a plug out there. Get out there. It's what are the dates for it again, Sean? March 6th?
6th and 7th in Philadelphia at the Marriott in downtown Philly.
All right. Well, there you have it. All right, folks, I got to take off. I got to get out of here. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, that is everything.
All right. Make sure you sign up for Sean's newsletter. That is the Kitchen's Cabinet, right? You can get that over at Patreon at Kitchen's Sean's, or just Kitchen's Cabinet. Check out the newsletter. Please like us, share us, put the stuff around. Thank you for sticking with us today, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back next week for another round on the eve of the Nevada caucuses. See ya!
So you're arguably the candidate with the greatest advantage in this race. You've been the vice president. You weren't burdened down by the impeachment trials. So how do you explain the performance in Iowa, and why should the voters believe that you can win the national election?
It's a good question. Number one, Iowa's a Democratic caucus. You ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a line dog-faced pony soldier. You said you were, but now you got to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you.